This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. In an imaginary kingdom, girls cannot be knights, only boys. So a young girl named Alana decides that in order to fulfill her dreams, she will cut her bright red hair and change her name to Alan so she can fight to protect her kingdom. Alana's story is one of 26 books written by fantasy author Tamara Pierce. Her books have inspired young girls for decades, including a young girl named Lindy West, Seattle writer and now New York Times columnist. So we invited Lindy into KUOW to talk with Tamara Pierce about inspiring girls with stories.
When I was in, I think, the fourth grade, I remember very little because I was very small. But one thing that I remember so vividly is my elementary school librarian gave me the first Alana book. You know, I must have been 8 years old, and I went home and I think I read it in a couple of hours, and I went back and I just devoured everything else of yours that I could get my hands on. I think from other interviews with you that I've read, we had kind of similar experiences. I grew up with my dad would read Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia out loud to me, and I was just obsessed. But then when I read your work, it was like flipping a switch. It had never occurred to me that I could see myself or, you know, young girls and women represented so vividly and with so much humanity and depth. What got you hooked on fantasy as a genre in the first place?
Fantasy as a genre, I'd actually laid the groundwork, or rather my dad did, when I was in second grade or so with Edgar Rice Burroughs. And then I'd gone on to read fairy tales and a lot of mythology, Greek and Roman mostly, but also the Arabian Nights and Egyptian mythology. But as far as official fantasy goes, I was already writing time travel stories. And in seventh grade, my homeroom teacher, whose name may she live forever, handed me this book called The Fellowship of the Ring, by a guy named J.R.R. Tolkien. And she said, give this a try. And like you, I was off to the races. I read it, finished it at 2 a.m. the next morning, cried because I thought there was no more. And then Monday, Mrs. Jacobson handed me the next two books because she knew how fast I read. And I was hooked with The Fellowship. A year later, discovered science fiction, but fantasy was where I kept coming back.
And you've talked about reading those books and loving those books, but noticing that there weren't a lot of women warriors in those books. Why were you looking for stories about women warriors?
I was looking from then on for strong girls in books, and the only place in the 60s where you could reliably find them in books for girls were in historicals. And to this day, I still reread The Witch of Blackbird Pond, Mara, Daughter of the Nile. But at the end of each of their books, they were asked to calm down and live the lives of proper young ladies or wives, in Mara's case. And they acquiesced because they felt they'd gotten a kick out of their gallop. I don't know. So I kept looking. And at first I thought I'd found her with Eowyn in The Fellowship of the Two Towers. But then at the end of the book, the third book, she gives up being a warrior to become a wife, mother, and healer. And I had nothing against those lines of work. I just didn't see why she had to give up being a warrior. But it was McCaffrey, I think, who taught me that women could be the hero of the book. And until then, I wrote Girl Knights because that's what I wanted to read.
Did it feel to you when you were writing those characters, when you were taking these strong female characters that you'd seen on the periphery of other books or sort of retired into a quiet life at the end, when you took those kinds of characters and centered them, did that feel like a deliberately political move or a revolutionary move to you, or was it just your instinct?
Well, I was angry at all those authors who had the chances to write highly active female heroes and didn't, or trashed other women. I didn't understand it, so instead I wrote what I wanted to read to entertain myself. I wasn't thinking about politics. Where I thought about politics in those days was in the fact that I'd written J. Edgar Hoover to ask what the requirements were to enter the FBI, and somebody in the FBI wrote me back that actually girls weren't allowed to be agents in the FBI in the late 60s, but that if I worked hard at school and graduated high school, I could apply to become a secretary.
Wow.
And what encouraged my wrath was that my principal patted me on the back once and introduced me to a guest to the school as our little women's libber. And those kind of things really chapped my nether parts. What I wrote for a long time was somebody very focused on what she wanted to achieve. She wasn't thinking of other women at the time. She wasn't thinking of breaking down barriers. She was just thinking of doing what she wanted. And then when I was in 10th grade, I stopped writing my own fiction. For 5 years, I was blocked. I wrote satire for a school paper. I wrote homework, of course. Has to be done. Want to go to college? Okay.
What brought you back to writing?
I have no idea. All of a sudden, I had this idea for a story, and it was 5 pages, and I sweated blood, but I finished it. It was a story about a rustic deputy who thought he could take advantage of 2 hippies driving down the road, and he thought the guy was his problem when it was the woman. And she turned out to be a devil. So served him right.
Served him right.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Tamara Pierce. She's a young adult fantasy writer whose books center around young girls adventuring. Her first book, Alana, The First Adventure, tells the story of a young girl who wants to become a knight, but can't because girls aren't allowed to be knights. Did you ever think that? I mean, that sounds like your desire to be in the FBI. Did you think about pulling an Alana and going to the...
No. No, by then I started to learn a bit more about what the FBI was doing, especially their boss. But I also, you know, kids... You want to try different things. I wanted to be the first woman president and got laughed at. I said I wanted to be an attorney and my own mother laughed at me. So I decided that I would go to college and become a psychologist. Evidently, that was okay. But my mother claimed to be, well, she was a feminist. She was hardcore. And I wasn't. I had a sense of humor. It was my doom. When I entered the Penn Women's Center in college, because, well, they were awfully dedicated. And I was dedicated, too, but I had a boyfriend, and I had a sense of humor, and neither worked out as far as my fellow feminists were concerned.
Oh, I didn't realize that you couldn't have a boyfriend and a sense of humor and be a feminist.
This was the 60s.
Maybe times have
early
changed.
Early 70s. Early 70s, and this was when Catherine MacKinnon and other women were rising to the top and when marches were being held saying sex period is an assault.
Sure, sure.
And I wasn't about to agree.
Sure. So you write very frankly and I think beautifully about the trials and also the joys of being a young woman. So you write about puberty, you write about periods. And I'm curious, what's your male fan base like?
Well, my male fan base, I'd say it's about 25%. A great many of them have been introduced to my books by girlfriends or wives or mothers. The younger ones tend to have been introduced by sisters or mothers, and they're absolutely wonderful. They tend to be very thoughtful. They tend to ask women for their opinions and listen. And they have their own thoughts, their own minds. That was just a side benefit as far as I was concerned. But I wanted guys to read them because they were adventures, not because they were girl polemics. Alana herself would be very confused at the idea of being a feminist icon what I was writing, female and male, was characters that my readers would feel that they could turn the corner and find people they would hang out with. I have taken some grief about boys reading my stuff. One very notable incident that turned unpleasant. A teacher asking his boys, weren't they embarrassed by a book with girls having periods?
I mean, they live in a world with girls having periods.
That's exactly what I said. You know, excuse me, but are you going to say to your girlfriend or your wife, you don't want to know about that stuff? This happens to all of them, you know. So that afternoon was not one of my better ones.
I mean, that seems like one of the real tragedies of art and literature being segregated by gender in this way, where boys are taught that it's not interesting or fun or cool to read books by and about women. I mean, that creates some real divides in terms of how we relate to each other in our real lives.
It does, but I found one way to get around it. A mom came to a book sale where at the time I had 17 books out. And she was there and she says, oh, here's the writer and she'll sign your book if you buy one. And she asked me, what would you recommend? And he was looking at the sprawl of my books with all those girls in armor, admittedly, but they were all there on the table. And you could see it's a girl book as if it were tattooed on his face. And I pointed to the first Kel book, which has Kel with a black eye holding kittens and with a bird perched on her. And I said, in this one, she and her friends, who are pages, fight off giant, hairy, four-foot spiders with green webs and steel teeth. And he looked at it and he said, cool. And I pointed to the second one, and there's Kel on the rock top with her spear in her hand. I said, in this one, she and her friends are cornered by enemy soldiers, and she has to get them to unite and fight together and retreat until they can get to a position they can hold against this enemy until their friends arrive. And he didn't see anything else, but his jaw dropped. And the third one, she not only babysits a baby griffin, but she is the assistant to the knight commander of the king's private guard. She fights a centaur, and she comes to individual combat with a giant monster made of steel with razors for teeth and claws. And his mother looked at him, and she looked at me. She says, we'll take all three. Sometimes you just have to know how to talk to them.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing about your writing is it definitely delivers on action and monsters and adventures. I feel bad if there are any boys missing out on this because they're just really fantastic adventure stories, but with a level of emotional intelligence and emotional depth, especially in the relationships between the characters that I don't always, I think... Well, I don't want to generalize, but sometimes it's rare to find that level of emotional intelligence from men.
Well, they have it. They've just been taught to be afraid to mention it. When I wrote Alana, I was the first women were entering West Point and the naval academies and struggling there. And when I began Kel, it was just after Shannon, I'm forgetting her name, had tried to get in, had gone all the way to the Supreme Court to get into the Citadel, which was the last all-male military academy. And she succeeded. And she went in, and she lasted a week. And the only thing I could figure was that she had thought that once she was in, the hate would stop instead of getting worse. The next year, Nancy Mace and another woman went into the Citadel, and both of them succeeded and triumphed and graduated. Most of my books, because of the military element, most of the secondary cast is male. I have to write my boys like regular boys. So Kel and Alana Alana because she's little, get a certain amount of grief. That's what happens among groups of boys. That's how our boys are unfortunately trained. And I was hoping that perhaps if they saw it, they might rethink it.
What has been the response to those aspects of your books? Because I mean, people, I imagine, get uncomfortable with talking about teenagers and sex. And
yeah.
Have you had pushback from publishers or just from readers?
From readers. And one girl really disapproved of the whole menstruation thing. I've had two, not bannings, but censorings in America, and nothing ever came of it. I had one contemporary teen romance writer. There were a group of them being interviewed by School Library Journal, I think it was, about the reaction to romance and physicality in their books. And she said, I don't understand it. Tammy Pierce writes worse things than I do all the time, and nobody ever says anything to her about it. And it's because people think fantasy is safe, which is the biggest mistake of all, because fantasy and science fiction and horror are not safe. They are rebel genres. I'm not good at making stuff up. I borrow from the real world. And what I borrow from is not pretty.
You know, so I write political columns. I write nonfiction.
Yeah.
And especially the last year or so.
Oh, please. Do we have to?
I'll be gentle. You know, I look at my job and what I do. Every week I have to come up with something new to say about the government, which is, what do you say? It's almost impossible. Over the past year, I've been thinking about how much of our political discourse is, you know, very polarized groups of people yelling at each other.
Yeah.
And I'm a part of that. You know, I try to be smart and nuanced and generous and compassionate. And when I look at what happens when my work goes out into the world, the people that are inclined to agree with me consume it and like it. And the people that have already made up their mind that they disagree with me don't read it. And I've just been thinking more and more about how powerful fiction is and how powerful narrative is in the way that it can get inside of you and sort of change your mind from the inside out. You know, it teaches you how to treat other people and how to have empathy. And so I guess what I want to know is, what kind of stories do you think we need to save us? And will you save us?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it's out there. We're seeing a lot more, not enough, but a lot more writing about race. And because it's written around characters that are like real people, it burrows in deeper. We're seeing a lot more about people who are ill, people who are coping with family members who are ill, people who are coping with family members who are ill and there's no money coming in. If I could bear to write about contemporary poverty, I would, but I can't because having been there and done it, I can't. We're seeing more about the dialogue between young people because I can't say rightly or wrongly because they're right. They don't believe older people listen, and they're right. They don't believe that older people have any respect for their opinions, and they're right. They don't believe older people have any kindness or mercy, except for a very few sometimes, and they're right. So if the change is going to happen, that's where they're going to find it.
Tamara Pierce, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was great. I enjoyed chatting with you.
I enjoyed chatting with you, too. Thank you.
Feminists rule.
Yay!